7.5 FM, W298DK Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. As the war in Ukraine approaches 2 years, the Ukrainian military's withdrawn from the eastern city of Avdiivka. The war a major topic at the Munich Security Conference, where NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the U.S. Congress must send more aid.
And therefore, I strongly believe that it's a good deal for the United States to support Ukraine. It's not charity, it's investment in their own security. Mm-hmm.
Allies of Russian dissident Alexei Navalny say his mother has been notified of his death Friday in a Russian penal colony. They say he was murdered. Russia's prison service reported he fell ill after a walk and lost consciousness. Former President Donald Trump ordered to pay $355 million in penalties after a New York civil suit that found he lied about his wealth in order to get favorable lending rates. He has vowed to appeal. And one firefighter was killed in a home explosion in the Washington, D.C. suburb of Sterling, Virginia. This is ABC News.
Prince Harry speaking publicly about his father's cancer diagnosis.
Prince Harry speaking for the first time about the moment he learned his father, King Charles, had been diagnosed with cancer.
I jumped on a plane and went to go and see him as soon as I could.
How was that visit for you emotionally?
I love my family. The fact that I was able to get on a plane and go and see him and spend any time with him, I'm grateful for that.
Harry didn't meet with his brother, Prince William, but tells me he hopes his father's illness could have a unifying effect on the royal family.
Any illness, any sickness brings families together.
That's ABC's Will Reeve. An autopsy report says a 5-year-old Venezuelan boy who died in December inside of a migrant shelter in Chicago died of sepsis and a bacterial infection. Medical examiners also said a contributing factor in the boy's death December 17th was COVID-19. This revived concerns about conditions at shelters and how Chicago was responding to the influx of migrants. Brian Clark, ABC News.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded the Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
For Civic Media News, I'm Terry Bell. Local clerks say they're confident they could run safe and transparent elections this year, but they say they could use more money to make them run better. Mike Moan reports.
The city of Madison has been recognized by policy experts for holding safe and secure elections during the pandemic. But City Clerk Maribeth Witzel-Beal says budget constraints can make it a difficult balancing act. She says there's greater interest in absentee ballots requiring more manpower and building space to process them. However, there's a key problem.
The funding that we receive from the state and from the federal government hasn't increased to accommodate any of that.
She says that puts more pressure on property taxes. Meanwhile, a bipartisan coalition of state and local election officials estimates that offices around the country need at least $53 billion over a decade to repair and modernize election infrastructure. There are specific requests in the current federal budget debate, but the House and Senate are at odds over how much to provide. Sunwoo Oh, with the progressive nonprofit group Stand Up America, says policymakers need to understand how pressing this matter is.
We've been working to try to get more consistent and predictable funding from Congress to help support local administrators to get the resources they need and help modernize the election infrastructure that's super outdated in most of the jurisdictions.
In a national poll, 7 in 10 Americans said they believe the federal government should be just as responsible, if not more so, for election funding than local municipalities and states. This is Mike Moen for Wisconsin News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to Civic Media News. I'm Terry Bell.
Coming up Monday on Matt and Air On Air, UW-Madison entomologist P.J. Leash joins the show. They're coming. Don't miss it.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly sunny and breezy today with highs in the upper 20s. Southwest winds gusting as high as 30 miles per hour. Still breezy tonight, low 20s under mostly clear skies. Sunshine for Sunday with highs around 35. For Monday, partly sunny and a high near 40 degrees.
Right now, 6 degrees.
Broadcasting from atop the water tower. Well, not really, but it sounds fun. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK. Amory's radio station.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education. Johnny. So watching you in the video feed, and it was like doing a little something there around the sides of your eyes. It looked like you were using like a chapstick or something on your face. And I know, you know, check out the Facebook stream, the Twitter stream, the YouTube stream, because you could watch Johnny doing stuff to his face. There it is right there. Nice. Nice.
I mean, Johnny, Tim, you know, I just got it's evening. And, okay. You know, I just put on this headache blend. I won't give the brand name of it, but I swear by this stuff. It's really nice. It's like a peppermint lavender. Mm. We'll roll it on next to the eyes, get the wide awake, you know. Let's go.
Nice.
Wednesday nice. Night is a special one. It's going to be electric.
Electric special night.
Wednesday.
Well, first of all, though, too, Johnny, reminder, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Busted Pencils is on every night of the week now, Monday through Friday. But Wednesdays are going to be really special because every Wednesday we are going to have our best friends, our awesome colleagues. They come from the podcast, Educators Amplified, whereabouts somewhere in the Milwaukee area, we'll just say. Teacher Joanna and Teacher Hallie from Educators Amplified, welcome to Busted Pencils. What are you guys up to?
Okay. Thanks for having us. Thanks for inviting us on the show. We are so thrilled for you guys that Busted Pencils is on 5 days a week now. And thrilled that you invited us to come one of those days, Wednesdays.
Well, you know, we gave you an option to pick a day.
Well, yeah.
I was saying Wednesday so people can remember.
Yeah, well, it's a perfect midweek shift because Otherwise you've got Tim and Johnny talking all this stuff all week long. It's like, we got to break it up somehow. Yeah, we have guests and we have awesome callers. But on Wednesdays, Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie, Educators Amplified, we've had so much great conversation in your podcast and in times you've been on Busted Pencils, mm-hmm. and then even off the shows, just so much energy and excitement around awesome things that are happening that teachers are doing, that teachers are talking about, especially in the Milwaukee area, the Chicago area, all of the kinds of things happening in our classrooms. We get to talk often about it, and now we're so excited because every Wednesday we get to talk about it together here on the radio with all you out there listening. You can call in and talk to Teacher Hallie and Teacher Joanna too.
844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. Stump Teacher Joanna, stump Teacher Hallie night. It's Educators Amplified. All right, so let's do a little bit of an intro though. So we'll start with Teacher Joanna. Educators Amplified. Wait, let me ask the question.
Oh, okay. Hey. Oh, whoa, hey.
You know, Educators Amplified, what is it? What's it about? Give us a little, you know, intro, and then Hallie, we're going to let you then kind of pick up where Joanna leaves off. So Joanna, Teacher Joanna, Educators Amplified, tell us about it.
Educators Amplified in its current form is mainly a podcast that shares the perspective of teachers or/ educators. We are public school employees in the state of Wisconsin. However, we do have a little bit of a history. Educators Amplified has gone through several iterations, and that is actually, I first met you through my first iteration of Educators Amplified, which was a live event, live broadcast radio show. I think, I don't even remember if it was 2017, 2018, a while back. And then we transitioned into a podcast over COVID. And now we're doing both.
It's now awesome.
A podcast and a radio show. But we also like to say that we are a movement and a space to hold teachers or educators and their experience. Hallie, what would you add?
I would just add that, you know, we hear a lot about education out here, but we rarely hear from the educators or the people on the front lines. And so we serve to be those voices, especially when, ooh, it's bad up in these schools. and meaning like, you know, it's hard to be a teacher right now. And so I really respect understanding when teachers might feel fearful or afraid to share what's going on with their working conditions or whatever. And so Joanna and I are like, hey, guess what? We're not afraid to share what's going on so that we can get to a better space. And we're looking to offer hope and inspiration to our brothers and sisters out there on the front lines doing this work with children.
And if you want to offer us some hope too, 844-967-2789. Joanna, though, you just got to go back, though. You reminded me of that, you know, the original Educators Amplified, Milwaukee, back room of a bar, bunch of educators, community members, board members in the Milwaukee area coming together. And you, that was the conception, was to say, let's amplify the voices of local educators, particularly in the Milwaukee area. And that's where it was. We were, you know, on a Saturday, morning through the afternoon, and host of Civic Media, Earl Ingram, was one of the main kind of, you know, MC of that event that created Educators Amplified. So, you know, Earl Ingram, I know you're out there listening to Busted Pencils. Earl, thank you for that, because Earl, look what you've created. Educators Amplified, the podcast, and now Educators Amplified, special appearances every Wednesday on Busted Pencils. Johnny Lupinacci, throw a question at.
Well, I mean, I'm just excited. I thought we were getting an origin story here. We got a little breakdown, but take it back, OG. Like, how does Educators Amplified thing come to fruition?
Well, when Tim was talking, it was reminding me of the original idea was kind of like a teacher town hall. You know, where it was like, let's provide, we wanted an event. Many of the teachers had, even though in Wisconsin, this Act 10, which was a bill that took away our collective bargaining rights and kind of devastated our profession, although it was a terrible thing for us, the teachers felt a lot of solidarity in all of the rallying we did during that time. And so we were trying to recapture this spirit of being together and united in support of our public schools. We were also trying to bridge the gap between urban and suburban districts. So in the Milwaukee metro area, we have the city of Milwaukee and Milwaukee Public Schools. And then we had what was called Region 7, which was all of our surrounding districts. And so we were putting together like an education or education town hall that included educators, school board members, community activists, union leaders to start to come together to share and to see that our experiences, although we were in different communities, the experience with the attack on public education, we all had a lot in common.
Think about it. Yeah, there. So Johnny, there, you know, and beverages and a food truck on top of all of that, though. Johnny's like, man, how come I wasn't invited?
Well, yeah. We've always been big on having joy in the struggle. Mm-hmm. We recognize we struggle, but we still find our joy. Actually, that was, do you remember, Hallie? That was our students last year. The senior class, the senior mm-hmm. speech was about, that was like our theme in our school last year was having joy
in the struggle.
Mm-hmm.
So the last time, so Educators Amplified, the podcast, we now have the origin story there, you know, Milwaukee back there, bringing together this town hall, educators, public education advocates, board members, community members, media at the time too, just bringing that together. And we did a few more of those events. And then you said, you know, the podcast formed, and I was so happy that you actually reached out to me at that time to bring me over from Madison. I was living, it was Madison, Wisconsin at the time. Yeah. You know, we talked, we were testifying about the truth, about the reality. Yeah.
I always say to Tim, it was crazy that our start was a 3-hour live broadcast. Like now, you know, Hallie and I just put out a 23-minute podcast and we're like, okay, yeah, that seems right. But the original Educators Amplified was a 3-hour live broadcast.
It's long format. It's long format, you know. Yes, I had the game. You just started with a long format.
We started with a long format, but it really did roll. We kind of did it hour by hour, and we had a panel, you mm-hmm. know, and then we had specific topics. And so, that was the origin stories, were these live events where we'd put together the panel, and then people were excited to just come out and hear and step to the mic. You know, it was interactive too. So we were kind of like live on stage, but our audience, we always had our audience members, you know, we had a mic out in the audience and people could participate.
That's what we're doing here, though, now every Wednesday, when you think about it, right? I mean, you know, we all four of us are at our mics. We're the panel. You all out there, 844-967-2789, you have that microphone. Give us a call right now. Let's do it. You know, we are here together every Wednesday night now to, you know, talk what's going on. Hallie.
Yeah.
Give me a sense, though, to... In a classroom, give me, you know, as we're coming up here, just what is to you one of your most memorable experiences as Teacher Hallie?
Oh my.
Oh.
Memorable moments. Well,
should I say exciting memorable moments or scary memorable or depressing memorable? Okay.
Oh, I was going optimistic, or just like because of the nature of the classroom that we were teaching and we were always circled up. So like literally every day really was like really great with the students, but I would say memorable things were when students would create, you know, a lesson or a day or teach us, you know, and them going through that process. Whenever kids create things, that's my favorite.
Well, and so the reason I wanted to ask that question though, too, is because when we want to spend more time though, too, kind of talking very specifically about, tell us about, you know, the classroom that Teacher Joanna and Teacher Hallie occupied and that special place that you created there. That's what we're going to talk about. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie, Educators Amplified, Busted Pencils, back after the break. But you can't say.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Nightlight with Pete Schwabba.
There's a small Wisconsin town where the population grows to 10 times its size every February.
Normally we're about 2,600 people during Berkey Week, that gets up to 20, 30,000.
That's Blair Flickinger with the Foundation for the American Birkebeiner. The skiing marathon started with a couple of people carving a trail between Hayward and Cable 50 years ago. It's also a tribute to the ski culture of another country already hosting its own Birkebeiner. Is it Turkey, Norway, or or Germany? The answer coming up.
There's a camaraderie that comes along with this event that is unparalleled.
A camaraderie between people who come to Hayward from around the world.
Make everyone feel like Hayward is their spot for the week.
So did you guess the Berkey was created as a tribute to Norway's 100-year-old race? And while our Berkey is a well-known winter event, it's still growing by adding other races all throughout the year. There's a slice of Wisconsin. I'm Terry Barr for the Civic Media Radio Network.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Oh, you know it. It's the dancing music for Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Yeah, we do want to talk about it, though. That's what we're doing every Monday through Friday. Busted Pencils, 844-967-2789. Educators Amplified every Wednesday. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie. We talked about the special place that you guys created as teachers. And I'm going to put out a term, and then you guys kind of come in and go, no, Tim, that's all wrong. But you guys had a special place in a school and, you know, special education, alternative education. You guys are cringing right now going, okay, tell the listener out there the beautiful space you guys created. Teacher Hallie.
Well, right. So, you know, it's funny because we were together for 12 years working in what we called, well, it could be called an alternative school to, like, you know, that's what people wanted to put a, like, put a label on us. But it really was a space where children could choose to come. It was in a high school level. They could choose to come to our program, and really from the space of, in, you know, we say traditional school really focuses on just, well, 90% academics, where we gave equal time into children developing socially, emotionally, physically, and intellectually, which was the academics. And so students chose to come there. They could, you know, have an IEP. They didn't need to have an IEP. But right. We did that together and created it and came together.
And Joanna, you brought this together. This was a conception, the real school, right?
Yeah. Real Academy.
The Real Academy.
Real Academy. Mm-hmm. And when they get to choose, now, just to, we like to help my neighbor figure out what we're talking about. So yeah. You were in a physical high school,
yeah.
But you had your own place in that physical high school, mm-hmm. where students in that high school could say, I don't want to be a part of what's going on in the regular high school. I want to jump into the real academy. And then you guys would say, sure, come here. Because I think what happens when somebody hears alternative is mm-hmm. that, so you're also that place where that's where we sent all the other students who couldn't make it in traditional mm-hmm. classrooms. Help us figure out the reality of what it means to be teaching in the Real Academy alternative education. How's that work, Teacher Joanna?
Yeah, I was thinking of a few things as you were talking. Now, first of all, the way we looked at it was a typical high school may have like 1,000 students or so. So we were like, it just seems to us natural as educators that if you have 1,000 kids, you might want to have more than one approach to how you're doing things. And so we just viewed our program as it was another approach. And it was an approach that did mainly appeal to students who were more global thinkers rather than analytical. And what that means is like big picture first, or the whole thing, instead of, it's like whole to part instead of part to whole. Traditional education is part to whole. It's like little unit, little unit, little unit test. And our students thrived in conditions that were more conceptual, big picture, and then they could work backwards from there. So one, and just to like way things are, you got 1,000 kids. I mean, shoot, I have 2 children in my own family, and
you do things different for each child. And so we viewed our program as just another choice to be able to make in terms of their education. And then two, yes, we were housed within the traditional high school because we knew that it was really important for kids to still be a part of the school community. And that them belonging, you know, to, again, to the school district and that school community, it's a really important aspect for adolescents to still see themselves as a part of it. So we were actually very adamant, like people had suggested that maybe we wanted to move out off site. And we didn't want that because our students didn't want that. We saw that it was important to them and their families that, again, they were first a student of the high school. And then second, they chose to go through their day in a different way with us through our program.
Johnny, would you have wanted to be a student at the Real Academy?
Yeah, man, that sounds awesome. I can't even conceptualize my own learning in a high school space, Tim. We'll get into my origin stories another time, but I would love to teach in it. I would love to work with young people, having been a high school teacher and worked in, like, I like that teacher Hallie reminds me, like a label, alternative education, to be able to have that as part of a high school. So where we're not disconnected from sports, we're not disconnected from student council. We're not, like, there's something really special about a high school. It's a community. It's a convening space. Mm-hmm. We're seeing that under threat all the time because it's increasingly become understood as a dangerous place to be. And that's a sad separate topic. But there's something excited about the energy that young people bring to the spaces that they share time together learning. It's really energetic. So yeah, I would love, you threw me off when you're like, would you want to be a student there?
I haven't told you enough to know, right?
Yeah, I can't even conceptualize something like that as a young person, but as a teacher, it would be wonderful to be part of. You know, it's inspiring. It's inspiring to be hearing about Real Academy and what it did.
Okay, but I got to go on a deviation here because, Joanna, you kind of, of course, kids liked it. And Hallie, you can respond to this because you said right away, it's like, you know, up there in the traditional school, they had their tests and they had their little units. And so the Real Academy, what I'm hearing is that, so you guys, you know, it was kind of like just a place to hang out and have fun.
Yeah, I would say, you know, no.
Okay. Come on, Sam, come on.
But I'd also say that, you know, children, especially adolescents, they want to belong. And even when they don't feel like they belong in the traditional system, making the choice to do something different is still a whole thing in that too. And then also, you know, I want to recognize that this wasn't just like, I want to do something different, close my eyes and pick. Like, it was a process. But also, I'll just say, to kind of cut back to you asking Johnny, I was a kid who went through traditional public schools, totally, like, followed the trajectory of the linear path, did relatively well, you know, could quote unquote play school as we were supposed to. And I remember as an educator being in this new space, how my mind was just blown by how schools could be such a better space and how I would have super duper benefited from a space of where community was a priority, where belonging was actually like hearing from other students and peers my age. You know, like, it was just so academic focused and I could do that when I was in school. But this was like a whole nother level of academics.
We, that we designed the space for adolescents.
Yeah.
It wasn't like we designed the space and we're like, hey, adolescents, fit into our space.
Yeah.
We created the space tailored toward adolescents and how they learn, think, thrive.
You said the key word there, Teacher Joanna, how they learn more with Educators Amplified, real learning on the way.
Connecting with you on air, online, and on the Civic Media app. This is Lake Air 1260 AM, WLAK, Amory's radio station.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. As the war in Ukraine approaches 2 years, the Ukrainian military's withdrawn from the eastern city of Avdiivka. The war a major topic at the Munich Security Conference, where NATO's Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg said the U.S. Congress must send more aid.
And therefore, I strongly believe that it's a good deal for the United States to support Ukraine. It's not charity, it's investment in their own security.
Allies of Russian dissident Alexei Navalny say his mother has been notified of his death Friday in a Russian penal colony. They say he was murdered. Russia's prison service reported he fell ill after a walk and lost consciousness. Former President Donald Trump ordered to pay $355 million in penalties after a New York civil suit that found he lied about his wealth in order to get favorable lending rates. He has vowed to appeal, and one firefighter was killed in a home explosion in the Washington, D.C. suburb of Sterling, Virginia. This is ABC News.
A new film about Giannis. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. On Monday, a new highly anticipated documentary about the Bucks' Giannis Antetokounmpo will be released.
People might say I'm one of the best players in the NBA right now, but I don't see it. I don't feel it because I'm scared of losing all this.
It's the story of how Charles and Veronica Antetokounmpo fled Nigeria to Greece to raise their four boys and the struggles they faced. Giannis's mother, Veronica.
We left Nigeria looking for a better life in Greece.
The dream of every father is to give your children a better education.
As an immigrant, you are nothing.
We've always been outsiders. We had to live in fear.
It's called Giannis, A Marvelous Journey. The film reveals how Giannis reacted to the news in 2017.
54-year-old Charles Antetokounmpo suffered a heart attack.
I said, I don't want to play no more.
Giannis, A Marvelous Journey debuts this week on Amazon Prime. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
With your forecast, I'm Corey Hartman. Mostly sunny and breezy today with highs in the upper 20s. Southwest winds gusting as high as 30 miles per hour. Still breezy tonight, low 20s under mostly clear skies. Sunshine for Sunday with highs around 35. For Monday, partly sunny and a high near 40 degrees.
It's 5 degrees at our studios.
Covering all the news that affects you with humor and a unique perspective. Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair. Weekdays 10 till noon on Lake Air 107.5 FM and 1260 AM WLAK and on the Civic Media app.
It's Black History Month, and Civic Media supports the importance of this observance. But what do you really know about it? I'm Calvin Butenhoff, producer of The Earl Ingram Show. Our Echoes of Empowerment Black History Stories will offer thoughtful answers all month long. Now, here's Earl.
You cannot talk about Black history without including some of the early music and art which flourished in the 1920s and 30s. Time now called the Harlem Renaissance. But this new Black cultural identity was growing everywhere. Trumpet player Louis Armstrong moved to Chicago. Painter Henry Tanner was accepted into the Academy of Design. Musician Robert Johnson recorded Delta Blues in Texas. Listen for another Black History story right here on Civic Media. I'm Earl Ingram.
Want to thank our previous guest, Bob Bonadour from the Milwaukee Planetarium. He's so knowledgeable and obviously loves what he does.
Yeah, because he gets to talk about space all the time. I'm not kidding you. I have watched videos about space and have started to cry. It's so flippin' beautiful to me.
Well, we found your birds.
Yes.
We have found your birds.
Space is my bird.
Matt Nair on Air. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
You are never far away from your favorite radio station. We're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app. And if you missed your favorite show or game, listen to a podcast of it anytime on the app or our website, civicmedia.us.
From the Mississippi to the Apple and points eastward, you're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
We'll be right back.
Right through the undertow. That's what we do every Monday through Friday. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education, Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie, Educators Amplified every Wednesday. Digging deep, though, into the Real Academy, the place where you guys created a space. And I think, and Johnny, you said this, and Hallie, you said, you know, as a student, but when you were a teacher, your mind was blown. I got to imagine a teacher out there right now who's in the linear, traditional academic setting, listening to the two of you talk, their minds are blown and saying, I want to teach the way you guys sound like you guys were doing stuff like that. How can we take what you guys were doing in the Real Academy and help create a movement out into the, quote, traditional classrooms? If you're one of those teachers out there, 844-967-2789. If you have a question for Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna, if you're jealous of the fact that they got to really do teaching and learning, we want to hear from you. I'm feeling like that what you guys, then you actually got to teach. Because when I hear so many teachers getting frustrated with the profession, a very simple thing is going, hey, Tim, I'm not allowed to teach anymore. I can't do this and I'm out. It sounds like what was going on in the Real Academy was you guys had the ability, that autonomy to be teachers, to create spaces that worked for kids. That's got to be so rewarding. Joanna.
Well, that's a big reason that we have our podcast, because we want to share that teaching actually can be really generative. You know, you don't have to be depleted if the conditions are right. So, and we're not here to say that individuals need to rise above the conditions that are set for them, but we do want to serve as an example and always provide the alternative to when we have a philosophical foundation, you know, in what we want to provide for our students and go from there. And like I said, before break, I talked about like a philosophical foundation for us was we're going to create a program for adolescents, like something that makes sense for them. And actually, in order to do that, you have to listen to them and you have to believe what they're saying. But you also have to have a lot of knowledge about child development and kind of, Hallie and I would focus on the biology of learning and the biology of our bodies in order to do that. And so we, on one hand, it can sound like impossible where people are like, oh my God, how can you change the whole system like that? On the other hand, I would, you know, and this is really what keeps Hallie and I going and uplifted was like, well, I think it's actually really doable because, again, I do believe it's the heart of what you were saying, that it's the actual essence of teaching and that is why people are in the profession, is to really connect with their students. And they are trained professionals. They are, if they are fully certified and credentialed, they are coming to you with the skills to be able to understand the learning processes, child development, curriculum design. And so, I don't know, that those are some things I was thinking about. What would you add, Hallie?
Yeah, I would add that I think that, I mean, beautifully said as usual, but also like that is why Educators Amplified is here, because I know we can talk about this beautiful space that we taught in, but it was also like hand in hand with a really toxic work environment where as beautiful as it sounded, I was also like, oh my gosh, this profession is just being dismantled. And I think when I talk to teachers, they're lost in the icky sauce of how they're treated as professionals. And so we are really here to be like, right, how can we help harness people back into, you know, or not even like they're connected, but how can we help you not get lost in the frustration, in the fear, in the scarcity mindset? And how can we empower and build up educators to like preserve, save, make these beautiful spaces for workers and children.
Did you guys ever take any criticism for what you were doing from any, you know, from,
Well, yeah, I mean,
of course,
anytime you're doing something that's unfamiliar, you know, folks are going to question. Most of the questions, though, came from the institution themselves. Students and families are very open because I do think they have intimate knowledge and experience about what wasn't, what isn't working in our traditional school models, from things as external as schedules, you know, like start times, end times, amount of classes in a day, the type of maybe passive compliance that's expected. So most of the criticism, but I would just say it was questions like, you know, school is a model or it's a machine. And when something different is going on, it's natural that people are going to have questions. So, yeah, I mean, and but again, that's why we have Educators Amplified, because we want to be able to share our experience, our knowledge, and let people maybe find in themselves that it's not that far away from what they're actually thinking and, you know, what they're thinking and what they're operating through. But and sure.
And what their intuition as a professional is saying is actually spot on. But the circumstances and situations educators are in is counter to their intuition expertise.
And Johnny, think
when we fell under criticism, the biggest advocates or the best spokespeople were our students themselves.
Absolutely.
It's interesting. Yeah, Johnny.
Yeah, you know what we've been talking about a lot on the show, Tim, recently, especially as you know, the importance of having capacity to recognize and value difference, especially when the way we've been doing things over and over again, whether it's the way we're thinking about something or the way we see somebody else, our lack of capacity and comfort and trust in doing things differently has to develop, right? We have to get better at that as adults, because what we're talking about here is, you know, when you said, were they taking any criticism for things more internally, is because we know there's information out there of how we can better support learners, but so often we aren't comfortable with, or we don't trust, like Teacher Hallie said, the intuition that great educators are having in those spaces to say, here's what a child needs, or here's what this young person is telling us through their behavior or through what they are communicating as their needs, or their family who knows them well is saying, here's what this young person needs right now from their community. And educators are cued into that, right? They have an acute sense of the diverse needs of the students around them. So it's really matching up. We were talking last night about special education and the shortage of special ed teachers. And the same thing came back up, how time and time again, schools are not structured in ways. The way we've done quote unquote schools, right, or schooling, isn't supporting the different ways young people learn and the different needs they have, as well as, and we fold that in, Teacher Joanna and Teacher Hallie are here to talk about this as well, and they give testimony to it. The way we do schooling also doesn't support the different ways great teaching can be done.
There you go.
Really stacked around one kind of teaching that most of us learned you can't sustain for very long. Like, it's hard to really be a great teacher in the sort of in the model of how we're taught to be this one kind of superhero that can do everything. And at a certain point, and that's not saying there aren't great teachers out there like that, but for so many of us, we have to find our own unique voices and really kind of fold into how are we able to be great educators. And that's also part of, right, the Latin root of the word education is, I'm gonna pronounce it terribly because I did awful in the Latin, but educare or educare, and it's and it's to be present at the birth of, to learn. I'm just gonna, you know, but But it
is the Latin way.
Yeah. To be present at the birth of ideas, to lead, to draw out, to lead forward, to bring up, right? And so to be an educator, right? To know that here we have some young people who deserve and have the right to be brought up, right? For who they are. And how do we better organize around that? And I'm just so honored and lucky to be here and to share that with all you, because Teacher Hallie and Teacher Joanna give us hope. They tell stories of that this is possible to do in the smallest, most local places. And that, you know, when you're in these situations, it's important to know that there is a whole lot of structural stuff against doing good teaching, but it can be done.
Yep. Well,
we'll talk about it so that we can keep making sure it's done wherever it needs.
Yeah. Our experience was with high school students who are very capable. You know, high school students are very capable of co-creating their learning experience and operating in power with. And that was something that I knew, you know, observed as an educator early on, where I was like, the whole like, well, no wonder people are depleted. They haven't me hoof it all. And and these kids are really capable and willing and wanting to be a partner. We just have to create the space and show them how. And so that too, it was, that's why we say what we did was sustaining. We used to say, no disrespect to people who do truly like suffer from compassion fatigue, but we never felt that way. Because we were sharing the load with our students. And that's, again, as trained and skilled educators, we were able to do that. When you talk about birthing the learning, right? Like, it's not just like the kid walks up to you and says, like, here's what I want to do, make it happen. You know, it's more you're observing, you're noticing their patterns, you're seeing what lights them up, you're seeing where they resist. And then, you know, you're building things together through that. And typically it's real world experiences. Something else, a big observation we made, was how kind of off base high school is with its focus on the future when kids are really present. And, you know, it's just honestly kind of meaningless to say to kids the whole, like, you're going to need this someday. It's a lot more, you're going to go a lot farther. You're going to get that engagement when you're talking about right now. And something that is relevant right now. And so we used to talk about that, like, let's get in the same time zone with our children. And that's the present.
And I also think, you know, the way we were really able to do this, and I think great teachers are doing this too, but having the capability to be caring, consistent adults, where we would talk in a circle every day on a regular basis. You know, like, you learn so much about one another, but then also how to direct learning, how to direct, you know, where they're going to go with things. I think that too, that it wasn't, you know, my mind wasn't on, I got to get through this lesson. It was also like, I've got to make space to hear, observe, be with the students so that we can move forward.
So the classroom experience, then, you had in a way, I'm imagining, like, when I taught second grade and I got in there at 7 a.m. in that classroom and I had those second graders all day long. Is that what you did with high school kids?
Yeah, we did. And like we said, like, that was actually a model that worked well for them. So the high school model now is like 50-minute classes in a lot of places and a million transitions. Yeah, we found that just simplifying and streamlining benefited our students.
Man, I just think about it because, 50 minutes, bell rings, get up, 2 minutes to get to class, get down, put your books down, another 50 minutes, back up, go to lunch, move it on. All of that, it's so programmed and so regimented. I wonder if students themselves at first had a tough time figuring out how to be in your classroom. Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna, Educators Amplified. Let's join their classroom when we get back.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK, Amory's home for Matt and Air on Air. Fabulous Farm Bay Pam Yonke here, bringing you the Midwest Farm Report live weekday mornings on WLAK. This isn't just for farmers, people. It's for anybody that enjoys food. Tune in 5 a.m. on Lake Air 1260 WLAK Amory.
It's 2024 and Worthington, Minnesota continues to shine. We've expanded so many things. It's a time of growth. We've expanded recreation activities with our indoor ice arena, our indoor turf rec center and playground, and our outdoor water park, Water World, is ready for another season. Our schools have expanded, and so has our industry. We're continuing to expand our population also, with lots ready to build on Glenwood Heights. So let's grow together in Worthington, Minnesota. It's worth a look.
It's easy to listen to your favorite local radio station anytime. Download the Civic Media app from the Apple or Google Play Store, then listen live or whenever you want from anywhere for free.
This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Of course we do. We give it all. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, giving it all every night, Monday through Friday. Educated educators talking education. The number 844-967-2789. 844-967-2789. Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna, Educators Amplified, our guests every Wednesday. Making it real right now, the Real Academy, talking real. And we left that with trying to imagine this high school setting. And I said, it comes across to me as like when I was a second grade teacher, I came in and, you know, my kids would come in at 7:30 in the morning. They would be with me all day long. You know, I'd take them to lunch, to their specials or different things like that. But for the most part, they were with me all day in my classroom. And you were saying that's the way the Real Academy operated. So high school kids stayed with you guys all day, and they didn't complain.
Well, no. Ellen, do you want to speak to that?
I mean, I just think it's worth looking at, kind of like what we were saying. I think it was just a reframing of, are we having students or children come to school to like help serve them, or was it more of, we're just having kids enter a system, you know? And so it just, that's how we created in our minds the way to work with students in these bigger, larger chunks. And it worked for us. But I think it was more of our,
and based on what they were saying, like, yeah, it was through hearing kids being like, it's too much to keep up with. I feel like I can't settle. I feel like I get to this place. So, they were more willing to spend. And again, this is what we all need in terms of learning, focus and concentration, right? It's like uninterrupted periods of time in order to get into a flow of some sort. I'm curious, you guys are college professors. Like, what are the length of your classes? Or this is something we would tell high school students. They didn't realize that college isn't like high school. Like some of the kids would say, I don't want to go to college, because they had a picture in their mind that it was Monday through Friday from 7:30 to 3:30. And they were like, oh, I want to do that for another 4 or 5 years.
Right. No, and even that question, it's quite varied. You know, right now, the undergraduates at my institution on Monday, Wednesdays and Fridays, they are taking classes on the hour for 50 minutes. So 9 to 9:50 is their one course, and they're going to take that class every Monday, every Wednesday and every Friday. What might be different, and this is for the high school kids, is that, and they might not have another class until 1 o'clock that day again, so 1 to 1:50, and things like that. So that's, you know, an undergraduate curriculum there Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and then on Tuesdays and Thursdays a little bit longer. But every so often too, I could have a single night class that might start at 5 o'clock and go for 2 hours and 50 minutes right there. And that's one class, and it meets one day a week. So it is varied in college. And John, I know, Johnny, you do a lot of work with graduate students. What does your schedule look like?
I mean, I like that question that Teacher Joanna threw out there, but I mean, I'm primarily a high school teacher, and I teach teachers and I teach college students, but I take the same approach that I learned with teaching adolescent learners, right? And so one of the great things as I experienced with my high school students as well, is I had the great benefit of I was teaching college while I was also teaching high school as well. So I could bring students, you know, from my math classroom to a math class on campus. And so they would begin to learn that, whoa, okay, college is different. There are ways, if I apply what I know about what I need as a learner, that I can maybe be more successful or enjoy the learning in college. Now, on the flip side, I teach, you know, whether I'm teaching graduate classes or undergraduate classes, and especially for undergrad classes, I'm a bad example of what's typical on campus, because people are shocked often when I explain this, but I don't teach in more than 12 minute segments. Mm-hmm. And that's because I have a lot of information I want people to retain. And so generally for one class period, which is about an hour and a half, about 90 minutes, I have two, maybe three really important 12 minute segments. The rest of the time we're actively engaged in practicing, generating questions, being in conversation. And so it's sort of like a lab station space around those 2 to 3 12-minute segments that I know that I have their attention. So they'll either get a direct instruction from me, but they'll never, and I want to tell them is I'm a talkative guy, but I will never give you a direct instruction that lasts any more than 8 minutes, and that'll fall in my 12 minutes that I get you. So we chart that out. So that's really important. That said, there are courses on campus where you're going to get hammered for a 90-minute lecture, right? And so, you know, those things are important to build our capacity up. But I'm often working with instructors or other professors on how do we apply that what we know about adolescent learners is that they do want to be here. They do want to be engaged in the learning, but they look tired because you're boring. I said, do I need to repeat myself? What you're sharing is really important, but break it into small segments that are direct and engaging. And then a lot of people say, well, I'm not here to entertain. And I said, well, but you're here to teach. Mm-hmm. And a certain amount of teaching is holding engaged attention, right? And so if young people are tired in your class, it's because I'm almost about to fall asleep observing because it's a snoozer, right? And so you can do things to break that up and be really helpful to learners. And that was true also in high school too. You didn't have to like necessarily put on a dance and show. You had to be real, be who you were, and also understand the needs of the learners. Mm-hmm. We weren't going to learn important new stuff at 7 a.m. for 13-year-olds, right? Also, all the medical information pediatricians are telling us is like, these young people are not taking in new information right now, this time of day.
Right.
So it was like really applying that stuff of like, when can we be our best learner? And how can I be the best kind of teacher that's natural to me, that's real, but also is not asking you to do something nearly impossible and then blaming you for not being great at it.
So you have a real academy philosophical foundation.
I'm vibing with Real Academy for sure.
Johnny's got a Real Academy in the head.
Oh, and I like that you told me 12 minutes because pre-COVID it was, you know, 15 to 20. And I bet now it is 12. You found a new sweet spot.
Well, if you go over 12, then I just start to see like attention and it makes sense. So get to the point. Put it in a TikTok. Let's go.
Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie, educator.
From the heart of the St. Croix Valley, we're in touch with you. You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station. Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
From the kennel to the coop, whatever the season, Fleet Farm has everything to keep your animals happy and healthy. From training your pup to sit season, to mastering those retrieval skills season. From clipping your horse for competition season, to keeping the backyard birds well-fed season. And of course, loving your pets like family season. there's a reason people say, if Fleet Farm doesn't have it, you don't need it. Because we have it all. Fleet Farm. Built for real life.
You're listening to Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK Amory and 107.5 FM W298DK Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Brian Clark. Reaction around the world to the death of Russian dissident Alexei Navalny. Dozens were on the